Think your last thought. Think it now. If your house is stone, it is crumbled. If your house is wood, it is burning. There are only neighbors, maybe a few left. Silence pops and crackle fire. Think your last thought. Think it now. What is it?
Said it looks like the enemy's gone. It's gonna be a cakewalk. Now what could go wrong?
Must have been a roadside bomb. Must have been a roadside bomb.
Carl, Dick, and George with smug satisfaction came into town with their roadside attraction. Doing a dog and pony, doing a dancing song.
I think it was a roadside bomb. I heard it was a roadside bomb.
Morning, listeners. Welcome to Roadside Bomb. We're a collection of poets and poetry sympathizers who are against war in general and this war in particular. We've been reading and performing anti-war poetry around Portland for the duration of this war in as diverse spots as Dignity Village, Pioneer Courthouse Square, First Thursday, Last Thursday, and other public spots. We're a mixed stew of Portlanders. We include a cafe owner, a Cherokee Indian, a school teacher, a social worker, a student, a bicycle activist, a yoga teacher, a peace activist, a house painter, and a Gulf War vet. Some of us are more than one of those. The poets you'll hear on today's program will be Bridget Whipple, Dwayne Ponce, Heidi X, Anise Piaf, Fred Nemo, that's me, and Patricia McLean.
Prayer for the Soldiers by Ethan Allen Place. To prayer, inside the mosque on the hill, a lone sheikh calling out the need for prayer. Chaos climbs the hill toward the mosque. Chaos climbs forward on steel treads, squealing and grinding, baying with the hellhounds, screaming of the dogs of war. Still the sheikh call into his cold microphone. Holy words reverb and echo across the crystalline night. Holiness rebound from one ridgetop unto another. Jenin is blanketed by his words. And still the tanks climb forward, growling death throughout the streets, throughout the night, throughout the houses. The houses fill with slumbering children. Eventually the prayers grow silent. Eventually the holiness accedes to the chaos, accedes unwillingly to the death. The green of life lit atop the mosque fades. The sheikh's lips have grown still. Death has come to Jenin, come calling for the holidays. 3, 4, 5 bright explosions ripple across the sky. Jenin camp is laid siege. The terrible beauty of war is let loose. Ancient Indian warriors ride namesake atop the sky, howling and whipping the wind with fresh death, invisible and unlit. Death from America is heard hovering. The living pause and wait, listening for their demise. A column of 12 armored beasts grind by our apartment. Once again, I retire to my mat. My little death is calling. It's 5 a.m. in Jenin. In Jenin, where we see more death before dawn than most see in their entire life.
What brings you to anti-war poetry?
What doesn't bring me to anti-war poetry? Everything about this war in particular brings me to anti-war poetry. I can't think about what's happening in Iraq, and I think about it every day without thinking about the people who live there all the time. And I know I have no way of knowing what their lives are really like. I only know that if it was the street I lived on that was getting bombed, the trees that I was used to seeing all the time on this beautiful street that I live on being blown away, if it was my child that was lying in the gutter with its head torn off, I don't know what I would feel like. My world would be blasted apart. There would be no world anymore. And I just don't understand how people can't think about those things and wonder why it's happening and how we can let this administration get away with doing this to an entire country full of people.
Coffee can be ordered in memory, hazelnut mocha half and half grande, as a person can be identified by Social Security, 540-318-3540-1. Oh, sir, where am I in this place and time? Where will I stand? Where will I walk? The unborn kid, the mother as a soldier, the sons of the elite decision maker, rapers, rape her. Where am I in this place and time? Where will I stand? Where will I walk? Filling tanks and worrying over prices. Someone refuses to drive and weaves through the burning dinosaur blood searching for air. Where am I in this place and time? Where will I stand? Where will I walk? A mother loses her child. Her patriotism starts to speak and mourns her loss with questions, as another tells her that she should shut up and be proud with no question. Where am I in this place and time? Where shall I stand? Where shall I walk? Go to journalism school and lose the story. Truth is a fight, easy to lose sight. Cut to the commercial, quick!
I had a taste of war, and to think about my fellow human beings who went through Vietnam and having to come back into this world where people are concerned about very, very superficial things over what's really important, I can't imagine that I would be one that could come back with my sanity after what I had experienced. The average American has fear of war, but it's more of, you know, that Cold War fear that some big power is going to come and change our way of life and what we call freedom, which is really more our freedom of consumption and freedom of excessiveness. And when you think about that, they don't really have the fear like they have in the countries where the wars are happening, the fear of being bombed right here and now, the fear of thinking your last thought. The average American doesn't experience that. And I think until people more and more feel the experience of that immediateness of war and being in that area, they really don't have the concept and the will to speak out against war.
Where am I in this place and time? Where do I stand? Where do I walk? A bomb penetrates. A bomb penetrates in efforts to stop something in death. Do you stop? In death, do you stop? Power to control, will it stop? A religion, a dollar, a religion, a dollar, a dollar, an absolution. Where do I stand? Where do I walk? A mother loses her grown fetus in the moment and asks the question in mourning, in the morning, in mourning, in mourning over coffee, half a grande spilled on the way in a car tank full, swerves around a bicyclist, gasping for air, hoping that the dollar she donated will stop the bomb dropped for religion. I mean, demagoguery, you see, or I mean democracy, in time before the barcoded soldier, mired in a void of truth, can rape death in order that he may stop. He can absolution, promote religion, no democracy, the cyclist who is out of breath. Oh, hell! I've lost the story. Where am I going to stand? Where am I going to stand this? Can we walk? Can we walk without truth? Cut to the commercial, quick.
Here's a poem by Lynn Martin called Memo to the General. Regarding body parts update, Christmas Eve 2004, Mosul, Iraq. I think we should count the hands. I think we should count the legs, the half legs, the eyes, the feet. I think we should count the brains. Never the same again. I say we count testicles and ears and noses. I think we would all go insane if we counted the kisses lost or blue lakes too far a walk away. Now, and what the fingertips remembered of the hair that smelled of lavender and summer, how particular the light, how particular the green shutters, How particular the weeping? What really got me started was someone sent me an email saying, click on this, and took me to a website of Poets Against the War. This was before the war technically began, and I'm not normally a big reader of poetry. Been around poetry all my life, and I like some of it, but it's not high on my list of things to read, and it's not high on my list of things to attend, but one poem after another on this website just struck me like a physical blow. That quite literally inspired me to try to get out in public and read some of this out loud.
A lot of my poetry tends to be about my Native American ancestors and how American Indians and the Cherokee have been treated by this country. And I grew up during the 50s and the 60s. First, the war against black people, the war in Vietnam were very instrumental in shaping my views of the world. And in the last 10 or 15 years, I've become particularly interested in studying the history of that part of my ancestry, which is Native American. And frankly, the atrocities against the Native Americans is really symbolic of the way the United States still views the world. We view it as our frontier, and in my opinion, we've got to learn to live as one world that's democratic and accepts input from the poorest of nations. I dreamed Cousin Evo came down from the mountains carrying a single red rose clasped firmly in his fist, and beside him walked the ghost of Che and the ghost of El Libertador and the ghosts of the children of the mothers of the disappeared, and behind those came the spirits of the vanquished gods Inti and Mama Kia, Pia and Maku Naima, Kulamina and Kururamani, Ichtel and Botan, Gurukhan and Jaluka, Selu the Corn Mother, and Kanati the Hunter, Child Born of Water, and Monster Slayer. And after this phalange, there came the immense river of the people, the lost millions bearing the deep crimson flowers of our tears held high into the air, millions of red flowers flowing north like a great river of blood, washing away a half millennium of history written in the language of guns and whips and disease by the cowboys and the conquistadors, sweeping before it all of the borders and all of the walls which separate us from them, from all our relations. And they came dancing into our waiting arms, and the soldiers of the empire stood mouths agape, dropping their guns, for they knew there was no holding back the flood now.
What if in those midnight streets we talk about black and moonless, unpeopled air waiting to be inhabited, the revolution's dream? What if the consequences of our actions decided to strike first, like death before we wake? Something is coming, and it is not the revolution. What if there came a river, beginning as a trickle, cracking out the cement, washing through the houses, carrying sleeping mothers and fathers, children and lovers out into the flood, leaves and trees swirling in the midst of tugging currents, and the water was red because that is the color of our blood, and our skin was stained, and our clothes were pulled from our bodies and sunk into the red depths, and all the animals washing away with us were also stained red, and all around were the sound of yawning wakers and the moaning of trees and things. And the dark blood waters rose into the black sky, and the night was greater than ever before. And not one of us was left sleeping as we woke up. All the eyes would slowly and dreamily open as we woke up into our terror, into the rising floods, with no clothes and no homes and nothing left to divide us. If all the blood that we have ever spilt came back to fill our mouths and clog our ears and blind our eyes, there would be no high ground left. Mountains would sink. Oceans would recede under the weight of the red flood. The stars themselves might drown in the black night if you were so softly and gently swept from your sleeping bed, if you were so softly and gently swept from your sleeping bed.
The flickers are dead, the season over too soon. The season goes on, but the flickers are dead. The hole in the tree gives off a pungent odor of decaying chicks. Cats have killed the flickers. I did not see the cats kill the flickers, but I saw them stalking. Whatever made those borderland birds, those woodpecker cousins, come to this urban forest? A feast of ants. The ground feeders fell to the claw and the tooth of the languid, the thoughtless hunt, an afterthought, needless, an instinct thrown into gear by visual stimulus. Bird on ground eating ants. Must kill. Not hungry. Must kill. Who is hungry here among the cats? Hungry enough to kill. Who waits for hunger to kill? The dish is full, but it wants blood. There is no salt blood, no moment when the kibble submits to the claw. It is frozen without fear, telegraphs nothing to the predator, who lives to feel its muscles, to go silent, to see through the dark when everyone else is blind and catch what can be caught. I would have to say that the first anti-war poem that I really was conscious of as an anti-war poem, Wilfred Owen's poem, Dulce et Decorum Est, which is very graphic and very pointed. It is not sweet to die for one's country, is what Wilfred Owen is saying in that poem, that war is anything but what we're told that it is. And, you know, it's not like the movies, and it's not like the patriotic poems. Obscene as cancer, bitter as the cud of vile, incurable sores on innocent tongues. My friend, you would not tell with such high zest to children ardent for some desperate glory the old lie, dulce et decorum est, pro patria mori.
I started essentially searching through books for anti-war poems. Then I discovered poems and anthologies that I'd looked at before, and when our country was not at war, they just lay there quietly next to the other poems, acting much like the other poems. But once we went to war, then for me they started to glow. They started to have an impact, to take on a fuller and deeper and stronger emotional meaning, and they made me think about the war. They made me think about what my duties as a citizen are, and made me think about what my fellow citizens' duties as citizens are, and made me think about all the conflicts that plague probably just about every American, in terms of we do need to fight for our rights and our boundaries when the occasion calls for it.
I can't sleep anymore. And when I'm awake, I might as well be sleeping. I can't do anything. Can you? My nerves in my body twitching, hoping to see somebody. To see somebody.
Gotten to the point where I can't sleep
anymore. It's full of choppers, searchlights.
And when I'm awake,
combing the streets, kneeling around the
house. I might as well be sleeping.
Where is somebody?
I can't do anything. I can't do anything. Can you? Can you? Can you?
Where is somebody? Where is somebody?
I peek out the hole in my wall and watch. My nerves and my body twitching. Hoping to see somebody. The streets are empty.
Where is somebody?
Electrical wires dangle and sizzle from the rain, sending sparks. upstairs in the attic. People with shiny long needles and bloody razor blades. People cut up real nice, wearing prom pink chiffon dresses. Red blood oozed from my skin.
If you're into anti-war poetry, you know, you're into history, you're into questioning the political things that are going on in the world, because the two are closely tied together. Other poetry doesn't speak to me so close to the heart, so close to our reality, so close to our being. I don't know, it's pretty much the most exciting poetry that's out there. It's poetry that really commands you to feel and to speak and to try to do something.
I've never really considered myself a poet, although I've written poetry since I was a teenager, and much of that poetry was inspired by Vietnam, by the social injustices I've seen around me, and I believe for me that that's the best kind of poetry. I think the best art as a writer and as somebody who appreciates good literature, I think all of the best art always grapples with the deep social issues. And to me, that's the issues we've been talking about. I've come to view war in a much broader sense, in that the war in Iraq is merely one more example of the war of capitalist America against the working class people and against ordinary Americans and ordinary people throughout the world. So when you say anti-war, to me, it means much more than simply the cessation of the gunfire and the bombs and armed soldiers. It means fighting the empire, if you will.
We rode into Dayton to try to make some change, but at the polling station it sure looked strange. A line of black faces, seven blocks long. I think it was a roadside bomb. I think it was a roadside bomb. Must have been a roadside, must have been a blindside. Must have been a roadside bomb. Must have been a roadside bomb. We went to the streets to raise our voices, assert our rights and expand our choices. But the cops came by, said you gotta move along. Must have been a roadside bomb. Must have been a roadside bomb. They leave us no exit and no place to turn. I think there's a lesson I'm starting to learn. It's time to speak up, it's time to stand strong. I think I'll be a roadside bomb. I'm gonna be a roadside bomb. I'm gonna be a roadside, I'm gonna be a blindside. I'm gonna be a roadside bomb.
You've been listening to Roadside Bomb, produced by Elohi Gadugi Radio for KBOO-FM. Our host is Fred Nemo, studio recording and editing by Dwayne Ponce. You can get the podcast of today's show at elohigadugi.org/webcast. That's elohigadugi.org/webcast.
And you are listening to the Thursday Morning Radio Zine for Thursday, June 22nd. Coming up, hear Mie Kim's report from the immigrant's perspective of pride.